Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 12th edition of the Triple Wing Hammer Report. I want to thank everybody for coming in, and I want to start out by apologizing for last week. I screwed up royally. I didn't do my homework like I should have, and everything that happened last week falls right into my lap. I talked to Mark Bliss, and we were confused on who was supposed to call who. But that was my fault, and I take full blame for that. So, but we'll have Mark on here in a couple of weeks and see if we can get his interview on, because I know a lot of you want to hear Mark and want to talk to him. Again, I want to thank all of you for following us and everything, and I hope we don't have another screw up like we did the last time. But we'll work with that. When you're doing something like this, you know you messed up. You know, we mess up players every time, but the thing is to get up and do it again so we can move forward. Before we get started tonight, we have online Jerry Sargent, and we got Jerry on because we got the National Single Wing Coaches Symposium coming up this weekend coming up, and we want to bring Jerry on to talk about that for a little bit. And see if to talk about the event and what's going on. Let's see if we can pull him up here. Jerry, are you there?
Hey, buddy, I'm here.
Hey, how's everything going on? Everything quiet down from the concert?
Yeah, I got away. I got down the hill a little bit.
Okay. What kind of concert is it?
Zach Brown Band.
Oh man, you're kicking it tonight, huh?
Yeah, man.
All right. You want to tell our listeners exactly what's going on next weekend and give everybody a heads up?
Yeah, we got the symposium. It's taking place at the high school where I'm the coach at St. John Paul the Great in Dumfries, Virginia, which is just south of D.C., about 30 miles south of Washington, D.C. And we got 9 speakers lined up to include you. To come in, and each one's talking about a different part of the single wing or a different genre, if you will, the single wing.
And how many people have you you think you are expecting next weekend?
I'm thinking 50 to 60. I mean, we can hold. We got 2 different rooms booked. We got a 75 room, and we got about a 300 seat room. So if we have more than that, great. We'll just move to the auditorium. But from what I gather, seems to be a pretty good amount of people coming in just, I think, because of the proximity of D.C.
Okay, that's fantastic. And are we going to be at the school or at the hotel, or where are we going to be set up at?
Okay, at the school. That's where the clinic's going to take place. On Thursday, we've got you leading us off and then talking about the hammer system and some offensive line play. And then Jerome Learman, and then Travis Connor, Jerome's going to be speaking on the full stand. Travis Conner is going to be speaking on the use of some multiple formations. And then we got Mickey Thompson coming in, a local guy, and he's going to talk about how the Stonebridge system has evolved over the years from when he started running single wing. And then we'll be out on the field with I got some players that are going to help either, A, kind of demonstrate what we do, or they're flexible, and they told them that they are going to listen to whatever you guys have them do. So if any of the presenters want to do a three-dimensional presentation of what they talked about and show the players, put it in there so the coaches can see a better view rather than just see a PowerPoint or a drawing on the dry erase board.
So it's going to be a lot of on-field action going on also, you know, besides the presentations.
And the on-field action will take place in the evening. I didn't want to have my kids sitting around all day. So, they would be getting a little bored. But I got them coming in to lift, and then after they're lifting, they're going to be out there. So, or if any of the coaches got a comment on something that they saw from, the presentation, say, well, we tweaked it this way because of this. And that's the beautiful thing about symposium is really nobody hides anything from anyone. And most of the guys, most if not all the guys, are pretty open to sharing their ideas and talking about some things and showing some lessons learned about what's been proven on the field rather than just kind of on X's and O's.
Okay, well, and one other a couple other questions I have here. And the cost of it is what now? Close to DC and everything where everything's expensive. And you got to pay all these bills and everything. What's the cost again now?
The cost is $25 per coach or $50 per staff. And so if you got five guys on your staff, it's just going to cost you $10 a piece. So just a flat rate of $50 per staff.
And you're going to get all the information that you want. Are we going to be burning DVDs or how are we going to handle that situation?
Well, I think Jim Barg is going to be filming it, and then we have a DVD burner on site, and so if guys want to bring their highlight films and burn them, we can burn them and pass them out that way. Also, I'm not sure about this for sure. I know in the Conclave, guys stayed in and were able to get all that stuff downloaded on Vimeo and put up that way. So I'll have to talk with the guys on the single wing board to see if that's the route we're going to go as well. But it's a great way to, if you're not burning 1,000 CDs or DVDs, you can go from there.
And now, I would be remiss to let you get away without talking about your school. How is your school coming along?
Well, we're a relatively new school. The school opened its doors in 2008, and I became the head coach in 2011. And the first 2 years, we're changing the mindset of the program and really getting the kids involved. And we had two losing seasons, a 4-6, and then a 2-8. And then, third year, we got the kids buying in our system, what we're doing in the weight room, getting stronger, and 7-3 this last year. So we're moving in the right direction, and the kids are really bought into the single wing. They love the fact that we don't have a true quarterback, and then three guys are throwing the ball at any given play, and multiple guys are running the ball. So we're really having fun with it.
Okay, well, and a lot of guys don't understand how we are different when we come to the symposium and conclave, how much information we share with each other and everything. And I don't think people get the sense of that. Could you comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, I do all the regular coaching clinics that everyone else does, the Glazier, the Nike clinics, and some of the worst clinics I ever go to are the big clinics where people come in because they don't want to share anything. I think one year we stayed and we watched Frank Beamer from Virginia Tech and then Jim Tressel from Ohio State, and both those guys were as vanilla could be, and for good reason. They're not going to share anything. Whereas I've been to multiple symposiums, I think this will be the fourth one, and then, been five or six conclaves, and nobody hides anything. And you flat out, they'll sit there, they'll draw on cocktail napkins at the bar, there'll be guys in the hallway, Doc Ward will be pulling guys aside, showing them how to SAB block, and it's phenomenal that if you walk away without learning a thing, it's your own fault.
Okay, and again, I want to make sure that everybody understands, and the cost for all this information that we're going to be sharing is what now?
$25 for a coach or $50 for a staff.
And
so,
if
so
somebody,
cheap.
Yeah, it's pretty economical. And is the hotel filled? If people want to stay in the hotels or whatever.
I don't think it's full. They cut off the. You can still mention Single Wing Symposium. I think it's $75 a room for a double room. So you know, two coaches coming in, and you can split that cost. So.
Okay. What's going on Wednesday night?
Wednesday night's just. We're going to meet at Applebee's right near the school, and I think I put that up on the Delphi site. Just guys coming in, and you know, rather than sitting in a hotel with nothing to do, so I figured we'd meet up there and just have a little social hour. You know, get it going, and meet then guys that know each other can get a chance to socialize, and guys that don't know we can. Facilitate introduction.
What most people don't know, a lot of football talk is going to be going on from there too.
You get a bunch of coaches together, everyone's going to have something to say. So you know, I'd say if you're going to come to Applebee's on Wednesday night, bring a notepad and a pen, and maybe a few bucks for some beer, and hold on, because that's probably when, you know, the learning begins for a lot of guys.
Is Ed Raceley or George Reykjavik gonna get a chance to be there?
I haven't heard from George. Ed Raceley, I'm told, is no. He's got some health issues.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
how when you get 39 years old.
It's tough when you get 39. I'm kind of pushing that a little bit myself.
Yes, sir.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Jerry. And would you mind giving your number out if anybody has any question, or would it be better for them to
email me, or my email address is my name, Jerry Sarchez, Jerry.Sarchez, Jerry. SARCHET at jpthegreat.org or 571-383-7410. Shoot me a text message or give me a call, hopefully not at midnight, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, buddy. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and you can go back and enjoy that concert, and I'll see you Wednesday afternoon sometime.
Yes, sir. Talk to you.
Okay, buddy. Thanks a bunch. Huh?
Bye.
And guys, that is Jerry Sarchez, who is the organizer for the Single Wing Symposium this weekend. Well, next weekend coming up, and if there's any way you can get down there, if you're in close proximity to get there, you know, I would recommend you get there. We will bear our soul to you. We will give everything that you want, you know, anything that you need to try to make your program better. So. If all possible, just come on down there and get all this information and ask the questions, because you don't learn how to do this thing unless you ask the questions. I remember the first time I got involved in this, I had to ask questions and didn't understand most of what they were saying, but I asked the questions anyway and asked the questions continuously until, you know, I'm not the brightest guy in the world. But you ask the questions and you keep getting the same answer, then something good is going to happen to you. All right, other announcements that I have for you and everything. The annual Single Wing Conclave in March is still on for March 6th and 7th in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And sometime along the way, we're going to get Todd on to talk about that. Probably going to get him on early, because it's important that everybody starts saving for these things and getting to attend these events, because these events I think are important. We got the Double Wing Symposium coming up, and as soon as we can get information on that, we will get that to you. I mentioned last week that Jordy has some family issues, and you know, dealing with his wife has some health issues, and keep her in your prayers. And as soon as he can clear that hurdle, he and JJ are going to get started to get this thing organized and everything. Again, any kids that you have or have doing something special, let me know so we can give them a shout out. And any scholarships, I know we do have late scholarships going out, and all walk-ons. I had a couple of kids that are going to be walking on to the universities this year. You know, I didn't coach these kids, but we got them placed into schools because you know, they came and did some of the things I asked them to do. And you know, when kids do some of the things you ask them to do, you have to help them somewhere along. So we got a couple of them placed as walk on at South Carolina State, and that is good for them. Anybody who can suggest a coach to come on our program to talk about his program, let me know. You know, we'll bring him on. There's no one great way to do this, as some of you have seen from our guests. Everybody does it a little bit different, but everybody likes to share what they're doing. So so if you got guys who are not afraid to share what they're doing and want to talk about their program, shoot me an email, shoot me a text message or email or Facebook. You can always catch me on Facebook. Just shoot it to me, and I'll talk to those people and get them on. Let's see here. I think that's all the announcements that we have. And now we get to our guests. Let me bring our guests on, the great Steve Calente. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. When I first started running the Double Wing System, one of the names that popped up, among others, was this guy named Calente. And I kept looking at his stuff and kept looking at it online, and eventually I bought his stuff, and I remember him doing his clinic in his basement. I mean, it was just wild. But he talked about it simply enough that I was able to get it. He's going to talk about it, the offense tonight, but let me tell you, he simplified a 46 defense, whereas we use a lot of his principles at the other school level, at Scotch Branch. We use a lot of those principles, and simply enough so that we can use it. And it was built for a junior high team. But it doesn't matter whether it's youth, junior high, whatever. If the principle is strong, then it will work on any level. And we ran the 46 defense, but we were able to simplify that dude and get our guys aggressive. And you know, like I tell people, a lot of guys that had a hand in that school being as successful as it was. So let me see if I can get Steve on. I see that I hope this is his number. Let's see if we can get him on. Is this the great Calende?
It's not the great one or anything, but yes, it's me. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing fine, man. How's everything going?
Oh, I'm living the dream, you know. Just hanging out in my living room. It doesn't get any better than that.
I know it can't get any better than that, man. I'm sitting up here in this little office of mine and just talking wing football. I tell you, man, there's nothing like it. Now, for somebody who has never heard of you, Steve, and I can't imagine that who that dude would be. Could you, and just for that one dude who has never heard of you, could you kind of fill him in on who you are, what you've done, and where you've been, and all that good stuff?
Sure. Well, I'm a high school coach. I'm in my third year as a head coach at East Catholic High School. We run a pure double tight, double wing offense, you know, built around the principles that Don Markham established and set records with. I've been running the double wing probably since I pretty much got into it around 2000, 2002, that whole block of time. I kind of did a single wing thing, double wing thing, but I've been doing that for a while. I really love it, enjoy it. I don't know that I have any great claim to fame. I have the good God blocking system that people talk about quite a bit on the internet. I'm proud of that because that's basically just a lot of nights sitting up with a composition book, doodling X's and O's until I came across the right kind of blocking system that made sense and finally answered all my questions and at the same time, tried to make it as close to what Don Markham and the greats and the Double Wing have done over the years. You know, just give it some rules. Give it rules that make sense to me, and then I could pass on to my kids. So, anyhow, been a head coach at the high school level. Now this will be my 7th year, I guess, right? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, right. 7 years. So hopefully we're going to break out here. This is the first time we've really had a good weight program at any of the schools we've been at. And we're seeing the results in the weight room. So we finished 2nd in the state, Class S in rushing last year, and we expect to do a little bit better this year. So we'll see what happens.
When I first heard of you or first got to be familiar with you, you were coaching middle school or junior high football?
Right. I left junior high probably 2006, I think, was the last time I coached middle school, junior high kids. Became a high school assistant coach in 2007, and then I was a head coach in 2008.
Mm-hmm. And you had those kids on a roll. I mean, I was fascinated that you had those kids as good as they were. You know, I looked at your tapes and everything, and that goes to show that you can run this offense on any level and be successful.
Oh, absolutely. We focused on the core stuff. You know, we just did the toss series. Everything was to look like the toss. We didn't get any deeper than that, and then we just tried to polish and shine the power plays, counter crisscross, the power sweep, play action pass, the wedge, traps, counter trap. You know, we just did those things and constantly watch the film and correct stuff and always working on double teams, down blocks, cut blocks, ball security. Just the basics, the things that make it work,
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if they're 8 or if they're 18, it's the same stuff that wins and loses the game. So,
You are big into weight conditioning. What do you do? I follow your blogs, or your information. You freely pull it out there how your kids are doing. What do you do that is so important in the weight room that that I guess makes you successful?
Well, the weight room, it's a good way to find out who you can trust. You teach a weight routine and you want to see the kids do it, and they buy in and they do what you are asking them to do, not what they want to do. And it's a good way to see who's coachable, and it's a great thing for developing mental and physical toughness. I mean, I think if you are willing to pay the price and you make the commitment and the sacrifices and your discipline, and you get to the workouts and you show coach that it's important. You build your program around the core kids that care. You're always going to have some athletes that are 3-sport athletes, and they don't give up extra time to get in the weight room, and you need those guys too. But your offensive line, your fullback, those guys better get strong. You don't really have a chance in high school football unless you're strong. And I can give you the data of how much we've improved in just 2 off seasons. And it's quite frankly, we've got sophomore guys that just finished their sophomore years who have bigger weight totals in bench, squat, and deadlift than seniors that have graduated, last 2 years. And that just goes to show you, when you roll your kids out, by the time these guys are seniors, they should be making some noise. Mm-hmm. They should be all right. So what do we do in there? Well, it's like anybody's weight program, it's about progression, getting stronger, gradually lifting heavier weights. We keep it very simple for our kids. We're not much different from what Coach Murphy was talking about. He has a rep range where he goes. I think he said they try to get 7 reps. When they can do 7, they add weight. We do the same thing at 8 reps. So we tell our kids, if you can do 8, you graduate. You need to move up. But we also let them pyramid up in weight. If we have a spotter, for example, if a kid can do 5, we might go 5-3-1-1 for 2 weeks before we max. We might stay with the same weight for 3 to 4 sets, between 5 and 8 repetitions. If we can do 8, we go up. And I keep track of their workout weights, but I also keep track of their max weights on bench, squat, and deadlift. I hope I'm answering your question, Leonard. The whole thing is the total is a motivator for the guys. bench, squat, and deadlift, we have, you know, 600-pound clubs, 700, 800, 900, 1,000, 1,100, and so on. And we give them T-shirts and various awards for the progress that they make, the attendance that they make. You know, these things, that's how you build a football program, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, how's your staff? I know in other places you had to use, or you were challenged as far as staff was concerned. Is that still
right.
an issue?
It's an amazing thing. My first year there at East, we had two open spots that we were not able to fill. And the principal brought one of the basketball kids' parents down to the gym. And we got to talking, and then the next thing you know, he's coaching football with me, and he's still with me now. So he's the only guy I have back for a third season. We have five coaches going into this season, and that is for freshman, JV, and varsity. So we're all going to practice together and then just break up for team time and break up for game days. You know, for example, if the freshmen have a game, we won't have those coaches. Or if JV has a game, we don't have those coaches. But we have five of us, so we'll get it done. We have an open spot now that we've not been able to fill here for a few weeks. We've been advertising it. But the guys I have are really good men, and I've got a couple guys back. I've got, four guys. All of them are back from last year, the guys I have. Four guys are coming back, so that's good. We lost one to he's moving to Florida. But it's, to me, you know, high school football, the big advantage, if you have the same guys back every year and you don't have to spend all your energy coaching the coaches, then that's a real plus. So
you have total buy-in by your coaches?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there's times when you know, I've got a coach on staff who played at Moeller High School. You know, he likes a lot of the things they did when Coach Faust was there at Moeller. Which is interesting because I think I heard Coach Bravo mention Coach Faust and Bravo and uh-huh. Moeller a couple weeks ago. But anyhow, one of my coaches, you know, played there, and he brings up Moeller High School and what they did quite a bit. So we talk about the comparisons between a school like that and then a school like us and what we can do that makes sense, you know. But they all buy into what we do. I'm sure there's one or two of them that like to see the football in the air a little more, but that's every double wing staff probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I feel you on that, brother. What about your parents? Do you and your community, do you have much issues there?
You know, this is the thing. If you asked me, you know, 5 years ago about parents, my attitude might have been similar to a lot of guys where I would say, you know, if the parents stay up in the hill and they don't bother me and they just, you know, send me a Christmas card or something, we'd be fine. But I have a different philosophy about parents now. I really try to get the parents to go through the program with the kids, and I look at it as a long-term relationship. You got their kid for at least 4 years, and then you build these bonds with these kids that last a lifetime, and there's no reason why you want to set their parents away from that and alienate them. And so we try to draw them right into the program. I keep them very informed of everything I'm doing. We have a touchdown club that's run by parents where I just tell them what I want, what I need, fundraising stuff they handle. I handle some fundraising, they handle some. They run the banquet, they run the weekly Thursday night dinners for us. You know, parents are great. Without parents, you really don't have a program. That's my philosophy.
Mm-hmm. So they're growing with you as the kids are growing with you in your system and in your program.
I believe so. I mean, again, you know, with parents, you're always going to have the guys that learn football from watching College Game Day or a Monday night matchup or whatever, and they're going to question what you do because it's not what the Colts do or the Broncos do or whatever. But overall, their kids are happy and getting better. And I mean, the kind of improvement we've made at East, it's really kind of hard for anybody to argue with what we're doing. You know, this is a school that not too long ago had a 52 or 57-game losing streak, you know, and we're competitive now. So we've definitely changed the culture. We've definitely changed the whole attitude about football, and I know we're on the right track and we're following the right process. So I feel pretty good about it.
And your administration is pretty in tune with you?
best administration anybody could ever ask for. I mean, principal comes down to the phys ed office or the gym or pops into the weight room and he says, do you need anything? You know, that's probably like once a week. Do you need anything? I mean, I've seen this principal in the gym or in the locker room or more than my entire previous career, all the principals put together. He's just, he wants the kids to be successful. He wants us to be successful. The athletic director never, you know, he's not the kind of guy that micromanages or gets in the way. And he's like, it's your program. You do what you need to do. And, you know, everybody just seems to just be supportive. It's great. You know, I mean, I know things can change quickly. You know, you can get an administrative change and then suddenly the bottom falls out. But where I am right now, I couldn't be happier. It's the right place for me. So.
Okay, and why do you run the double wing, Steve?
Why? It speaks to me in terms of the style of play. I think, you know, Markham says, oh, I always try to find a way to get more bodies and run people over, and I just want to bowl everybody over. And I sort of have the kind of the same sort of a caveman mentality. You know, you're just gonna run right at the defense and keep hammering away. And I think all the things about the double wing, the double teams, the superior numbers at the point of attack, the angles, the conflict that defenders are put in, series football, the way you can find a spot for any kid. I mean, you could have undersized guards in this system. The tight line splits allow them to be successful. And you can have kids who are hugely overweight with bad feet, and they can find a home playing center. Or, you know, you might have a tight end that can't catch the ball, but he'll cut block like crazy. You know, there's a home for every kid. That's why I run it. I think it's kid-friendly. It's coach-friendly. You can coach it by yourself. I mean, you can coach the offense with one guy. Defense a little tougher. Mm-hmm. But you really can run this. You can install this whole thing by yourself, and I don't know too many systems that you can do that. I've tried other stuff before, and I struggled. I used to be a triple option guy, and I struggled. So this is the right thing for me.
Well, it keeps you, lets you go to bed early at night, I can tell you that.
There's not a whole lot to think about. Like, we had a meeting yesterday, Leonard. We had a coaching meeting, and we started at 11. We finished at 3. We didn't talk about offense very much because everybody knows what we're doing. There's not, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's no mystery to it. Uh-huh. We talked about defense, and we wanted to make sure every coach knew how to coach his position, and that's what we talked about. We talked about personnel. We really didn't draw a single offensive play or formation. Everybody knows what's up there, you know. So it's great. It's great.
How do you build leaders on your team? You know, you have to have some sort of leadership quality in your kids and everything. Somebody has to step up. How do you get that, or how have you done it in the past?
Number one, you have to believe in the kids first. That's the first. Like, nobody will rise to low expectations, so you have to have high expectations, and you have to believe that these kids can do what you're asking them to do, and then you have to hold them accountable. And you, early on, as you're setting the tone and the culture, you may not have real leaders, but they will emerge, and you may be surprised who emerges as your leader. And I'm going to give you an example, if you don't mind, real-life example. Two seasons ago, we had this kid on my current team. His nickname is Baby Shea, and he was a sophomore, and big kid, big body kid, about 240 at the time, probably bench pressed about 150, 155 at the time. But we didn't have a lot of big guys, and we saw this big body kid as a sophomore, and we thought we've got to get him involved with varsity. Apparently, he didn't even start as a freshman, so we raised a lot of eyebrows by putting him with the starting varsity unit as center on the first day. But one of the things that spoke to me about this kid was when I was hired, we needed to put a weight room together. And when we ordered the equipment, it came in boxes and in pieces, and it had to be bolted together. And I spent a week, maybe a week or two, early in the morning, I'm talking about 6 a.m. in the morning, putting power cages and leg presses and benches together. Well, that kid was there every morning. You know, as a sophomore, every morning that kid met me with a toolbox and sat there until the job was done. This was in the summertime. He didn't have to be there. You know, he put in his time. So he ended up starting for us, and he struggled. He struggled. And he's not a strong kid. He was probably like a 600-pound club kid his first season. And then last year he got up to 800-pound club, and now he's a 1,000-pound club kid. He's one of the strongest. He's got the biggest bench press on the team. So he's come a tremendously long way, but he lives and breathes football. You see him walking around town with his East Catholic football bucket hat on his head, and he's got his Letterman's jacket. You know, has become an icon for this football program, and his popularity has changed. He's got a girlfriend. I mean, the whole deal, you know. And 2 years ago, I'm not sure too many people would have thought he would have been a team captain and just represent the program and be a leader that he is now. And he's passionate, so he makes a good leader because he believes in what we're doing, and he knows what has to be done, and he's going to see that it gets done by the other kids around, and that's what you want, you know. So, like I said, you believe in them, you develop them, and you praise them, and you hold them accountable. The same things you do, Coach, you know.
Does that help? Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just getting into what you do in your program. There's no right or wrong answer. It's what you do, because a lot of guys listening, I know they struggle with the situation, you know, and I tell people all the time, I got the best seat in the world because I get to hear all this good stuff and be able to implement a lot of this stuff, you know, and some of the things that we have talked about over the last 12 weeks I've implemented the things we're doing, and I've seen a change in some of our players. Do you coach your position on the field?
I do. I probably have a unique way of doing things. You know, I'm kind of a control freak. I like to know what's going on in every position. Now, we've talked a little bit about my staffing issues, okay? I had one teacher coach, one guy in the building last year. He was my freshman head coach. And he would finish up with his classroom around 2:30-ish or so. My kids are finished school at 2 o'clock. So I've got from 2 to 2:30 before I have another teacher coach. And the non-teacher coaches roll in around 3, 3:15. So I've got all these kids from 2 to 3:15, and we hired a policeman, the guy from Moeller's, a policeman. He can get in at 2. So what I would do is when he gets in at 2, I would send, let's say I send the offensive line into the weight room, okay? And I take all the backs out in the parking lot, and we run all our backfield schematics and ball handling and all that right out in the parking lot against cans and cones. So I'm coaching every back in the program while he's got the lineman lifting, and we do that for 45 minutes, and then we switch. And now I have all the linemen. I get them dressed and take them out and do the sled and the double teams and, you know, pulls and the pass protection while he's got all the backs lifting. And by then all the other coaches are around, and then we get everybody dressed and we get out on the field and do our practice. So I have basically a 45-minute block that is a pre-practice block for both the offensive line and the backs. And then on defensive days, I might do, you know, pass Kelly or something like that. But I really coach all the positions to some extent. In the past, if you would have asked me, I would have said I'm the offensive line coach for the offense and I'm the linebackers coach for the defense. But I would float around and have an assistant run a drill while I go check on another group and try to help out in certain spots there. This year will be the first time in my entire coaching career that I will have defensive backs as my base responsibility on defense, and I will have running backs as my base responsibility on offense, because I have an offensive line coach, two offensive line coaches, and a tight end coach all returning, and I lost my running backs coach. So it just makes sense for me to make the step to the other, you know. I coach the little guys now.
Okay.
It'd be a little different, but I really coach them all anyways, you know. Just I chipped in a lot. Mm-hmm. Hope that helps.
Yeah. Your offensive line blocking system, let's get to talking about that, because I got to look at that thing good and God, and I said, what in the world is this dude talking about?
Right. Right. Well, you know, for a lot of years there was God blocking. I mean, you've heard of God blocking, which is inside gap is your first responsibility. The O stands for an on block, which is basically if somebody was lined up head up on you, it was considered on. And then the D is for down block, or some people say double down, where you're, if you don't have anybody on you, you go ahead and block down, and it would create some double teams for you. But a lot of coaches were finding out that they would have to go ahead and use their SAB, you know, SAB, severe angle blocking, or their domino call, and just wash everything down because of loaded fronts and blitzing fronts and all that. Or they might have found out that certain defenses, they weren't able to get their double teams just right, or, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, I was right there with everybody else with the positives and the negatives to that system. But, you know, at the time, my center was just a zero hole, and then it was 2-4-6 on the right and 3-5-7 or 1-3-5 on the left. And then I realized I only really had 9 holes. It was supposed to be a 10-gap system. So I reconfigured it, you know, which apparently Jerry Vallotton had done anyways. I didn't even know that, but apparently he had 10 gaps anyways. So I reconfigured it so that I ended up with 2 numbers for the center, his left side and his right side, and I still numbered everybody else, and I ended up with 10 gaps. And by looking at all the Don Markham film and studying all the film and the way he was blocking stuff, we realized we wanted to move double teams around, and we wanted to run a tight hitting power and a wider power. And we basically, you know, threw a lot of X's and O's on the whiteboard and a whole bunch of composition books, a lot of late nights waking up, sitting up in bed, turning the light on, drawing stuff out, going, aha, you know, finally figured out this good God system. And I get better at it every year, and I get better at teaching. I can teach that thing in 20 minutes now, Leonard. I kid you not. I can have every lineman and every back in my program knows the good God system in 20 minutes, and they can open any hole 0-7 in 20 minutes. I got it down. The big key, and this is the real key here, is you don't teach the rules, you teach the commandments. The commandments tell you who's using what rule. Okay, that's the idea. Once they know who's using what rule, they all know what they're doing and what everybody else is doing, and that's the real key. So
you have your line communicating, and that will let them know exactly what they need to do.
Yeah, it's I don't know how much time you have, but I'd be glad to explain
time.
It to you.
Go ahead, okay. I got time.
All right, here's the basic idea. All right, you have to define some terms for the kids. Okay, everybody needs to know what their inside gap is. You know, for us, your inside gap is simply the space between you and your inside neighbor. Okay, so, and we only use this good God system for plays where we want to have, you know, down blocks, double teams, and kickouts, and we're going to do pulls from the backside. So our power, counter, and trap plays use the good God system. We don't use good God for sweeps. We don't use good God for reverse, you know, belly plays, blast, or any of that stuff. This is for powers, counters, and sweeps. Basically plays or schemes where you want a double team and a kickout. Okay, so you got to understand that up front, and then you got to define the terms for the kids. Okay, and I'm only going to teach the good God stuff for the first 2 days. I'm not going to teach anything else to the kids. All right, just to make sure everybody has it down. You got to define what inside gap is. You got to teach them what on is. For us, on is a little different than it is for other coaches. For us, you're on. Okay, if your eyes are in any shade on me, both eyes could be on my inside shoulder pad, head up, or outside shoulder pad. If your helmet is in any of those thirds, inside third, head up, outside third, that's an on to me, okay? Because, you know, kids line up, they don't go eye to eye. They screw up their alignment all the time, you know, slight shades here and there, right? Outside gap is opposite of inside gap. Your face is between my outside foot and my outside neighbor's inside foot. So you're in that gap. That's outside gap. And then a down block just means you're blocking down on the guy that's on your inside neighbor. So I hope you're still with me. There's a lot of stuff I'm throwing at you. It looks a lot better if you write it down. All right, so anyways, once you have the kids understand what inside gap, on, outside gap, and down mean, once they know what that means, then you can teach them the commandments, okay? Here's the commandments, all right? And I don't have these written down in front of me, so I hope I don't mess this up. Okay, number one, if we run at you, you must be good. So that means, let's say I'm running a play, 34 power, OK? okay? We teach everybody that that means the three back is going to the four hole. So everybody knows we're running at the four man, so he must be good. And I ask them, what rules are you using? They're like, the good rule, okay? So let's work through the good rule. G is inside gap. O is on. Second O is outside gap. D is down. And you know what? You know what that is, Leonard? And all that is a simple way of scanning from your inside foot to your outside foot. That's what good is. If you scan from your inside foot to your outside foot, you block that guy. If he's not there, you block down. So that's what it is, okay? And the only difference between the good rule and the God rule is, okay, the outside gap is ignored by the God blocker, all right? So here's the second commandment, all right? First commandment was, remember it? If we run at you, you must be good. The second commandment is good people have God inside them. So if I'm running 34 power, the four man knows he's got God inside him. So he knows everybody inside him is running God blocking. So he can actually turn and say, you guys are God blocking because they're running at me. All right? The third commandment is the good fella, okay, that's the guy we're running at, the good fella works for the kingpin. All right, you know crime movies, they have a kingpin, right, mm-hmm. the mob boss, right? Well, we always say the kingpin has an angle, all right? So you got the good fella working for the kingpin, all right? So the kingpin, his rule is gap down backer. So he's not going to block anybody head up. He's always going to have an angle to the inside. And what that does, it makes a tandem. The good fella and the kingpin create a double team.
Gotcha.
Right? Creates a double team. Mm-hmm. So the next commandment then is the FBI always follows the kingpin. So the good guy can turn to his outside and say, hey, I'm working for you, you're the pin. And then he looks to the next guy, you follow the pin, so you're FBI. So you got one kid can tell everybody what to do.
Okay.
And it's even your slowest kids can work it out after, you know, a couple days of it. But in 20 minutes, I draw up every power counter and trap from 0 through 7 hole, and those kids can get the blocking right by using the commandments once they know that the terms have been defined for them. It's pretty impressive. And we keep it simple, too. When we introduce this stuff, Leonard, we only have one backside scheme, which is pull-pull-cut, which means the guard's pulling, the tackle's pulling, and the tight end's cutting. As the year goes on, we'll add some tags to vary the backside, but we always introduce it, you know, with a simple rule of pull-pull-cut on the backside. So, but that basically it's not, you know, it's not what you do, but it's how you do it. When you teach this stuff, if you teach it, you know, progressively and clearly, and you put it on the chalkboard and you walk through it and you would ask for a lot of questions and you do lots of assessments with the kids, you're constantly checking for knowledge, you're constantly checking for understanding, and you constantly make an assessment on when they get it before you move on. That's the key. I mean, you can get much more tricky and complicated if you've got some patience and some ability to you know, quiz and find out if you can move ahead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You still with me or did I lose you completely?
No, I got you. No, I'm right here with you. I read the stuff, so I got it.
Yeah, you've seen it.
I've seen it.
All right.
Now, what on your backside? What pulling techniques? What pulling techniques do you use? A lot of guys are looking, are going with the what you call that thing? The
like a skip pull.
The skip pull, yeah.
Yeah, we don't skip pull. I'm a Markham guy. You know, I'm very basic, and you know, if you, this is a story I like to tell. I watched the Markham clinics. You know, I never actually went to a Markham clinic. I just watched them on VHS tapes from the old grainy tapes from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And there's a question on there where somebody asks him about footwork, and he says, you know, you're going to think I'm crazy, but we don't have any footwork. You know, he goes, we're just running. And, you know, that stuck with me. And that's really, we pickpocket, you know, where let's say I'm the left guard and I'm pulling on a 34 power, I'm pulling. My line is back pretty far, so I don't need to skip pull or do anything fancy. All I got to do is I have my guy reach with his right hand to the center's right hip, and he just pulls himself across. And you know, he steps first with his right foot like he's running, and then he crosses over and runs. We don't cross over first or any of that, because my kids would just trip and fall down, and I'd spend a lot more time coaching something that I don't think really gives you that big a difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, maybe other people have video evidence where they got this huge improvement by changing it, and it was a good payoff for them. I'm slow to make changes like that, you know. I'm very slow to make changes like that. I think if it's working, then you don't fix it. You just let it go, you know. So what are you doing now? That's the question.
This is about you tonight. We're doing a whole bunch more. Well, we got quick and faster guys, so we're doing a whole lot more on the backside, and we're doing a lot. So we can talk about that later. But it's all about you tonight, okay? And I'll be
explaining. All right,
I'll be talking at a clinic this weekend, well, next weekend at the Sing Wing, and I'll be explaining a lot more what we do, you know, as far as offensive line blocking. But it has evolved over the years because we got our linemen are a lot quicker and a lot faster than what I had at the other place. The other place, we were just huge, so we can just SMB every day. But what I found when I got this school, they got just as bigger and stronger guys that we have, so we have to do a little bit of thing different. But we'll talk about that later, okay?
Sounds good. I know you started pulling a bunch of different people. We do, too. Pretty simple, though. It's pretty simple.
Yeah,
no fancy
it's
footwork.
Simple. Yeah, I mean, I don't do anything complicated. I just keep it real simple. Our kids have picked it up. I mean, our kids are years ahead, you know, of what we do. Because I get our offensive linemen to take ownership, and they make the calls. Once
uh-huh.
I do explain the concept, they make the calls on the line, and you know, we can do three or four different type of blocking scheme up there, and still get the same effect that we've been getting in the past. But it's not about you. It's not about me tonight. It's about you. Okay.
All right.
You talk a lot about the fullback. Describe that kind of guy to me.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, if you I don't know if you saw our highlight clips on Huddle. I put them on a public access. This year, we had one guy who was about 210, 220, 6'1", 210, 220, good hands, you know, not a super physical blocker, pretty good feet for a bigger kid. He liked to run the ball, you know, not great speed, probably ran about like a 6'1 in the 40, our 40, because we run on long grass that's wet uphill, so you should just know that up front. And then the other guy was little, but he was a 1,000-pound club kid, 165 pounds. Wears a medium T-shirt, but he's tough, you know. And so it kind of goes to show you that as long as your kid's tough and he'll do, you know, good technique, like we want nice low blocks with the shoulder and, you know, attacking the hip and running the feet with a wide base and all that stuff. The things that we do, we can get away with different kind of guys, but they do have to be tough, and we like strength. And I'm learning, just like anybody else, over and over and over again, no matter what, if you have better people, this thing works better. So you got to just keep trying to make your guys better or find better guys. And, you know, the better they are, you know, you give me a better fullback and the whole offense goes better. So one of the things I got from Markham, you know, when I first started running this was that he said, I think I need a fullback. And I think so too, you know. But I've had different kinds of guys do it. I would like to see, you know, a guy who weighs 230, 240 that could run 4.5 and could bench press 450, but I don't have that, you know. So we'll go with what we have. I usually have two guys do it because my guys also start on defense. Almost everybody plays defense. And I think if you can cut their offensive snaps in half by sharing a position, then you're going to be a little bit more fresh for defense, and then you have automatically more experience depth if somebody does get hurt. So, like, my fullbacks will shuttle the plays in. Usually I'll have one pair of wings do that too. They run the plays in for me. So, you know, people talk about who's starting. I usually have 13 or 14 starters, you know, in that way.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that's just what we do, you know.
Okay. That's a good segue into the next question I was asked. Now, the biggest thing that people are doing now is going up-tempo, no huddle and all that stuff. Do you do any of that in your program?
You know what? There's times when we sure could use it. We've, there's been times where we've just done a lousy job of stressing it, where when we need it to hustle, guys were still doing the shuffle to the line, and that's just coaching, because it's a football IQ thing. I mean, when you're in the game and it's a close game, or when you're ahead, or when the time is on your side, you know, when you have nine kids that also got to play defense and special teams, you want to shorten the game as much as possible. You don't want to be up tempo and have more snaps, because you're just going to get tired, you know. Uh-huh. Let me paint a picture for you. This, our football program is definitely unique. Okay, we play on a Friday or a Saturday, a varsity game. Okay, now the whole staff and all the kids that play are going to be tired after the Friday game. They're going to, you know, going to be up late watching film and calling the newspaper and turning in stats, and everybody's going to be tired. The kids are going to be beat up from playing. Well, we'll turn around and the same staff and some of the same kids we'll have to get up early on Saturday morning and go play a JV game. So, because we might have, like, you know, we started sometimes last year seven sophomores that also played JV. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? So you don't really want to be in a long game on Friday. You try to shorten it. So we really don't. We haven't really bought into the, you know, warp speed stuff. I think that's more of an advantage for teams with the bigger roster, and probably, you know, kids that are in better shape than the other side. I don't think we're there yet.
Okay. Yeah. How do you game plan, Steve?
You know what? I'll tell you what. This is the thing, okay? We want a game plan not to lose our – we don't want to beat ourselves. A lot of our practice time has been focused on blocking and tackling, executing, and ball security and discipline. You know, we watch film and we scout people, but we don't know how they're going to defend us unless they're defending another double wing team during that game that we're scouting. And in some cases, it's very strange, some teams will change it up anyways. You know, like they might go 4-4 against one team and do well, but they come at you 5-3 or 5-2 or 6-3, or you don't really know. But you do like to know who their people are, so you know who you want to stay away from and who you want to run at. That's another Markham thing, you know. It's all about the people, who you can single block, who you can double team, and, you know, who might catch you from the backside, who's undisciplined, and you can get them jumping off sides with your no play or your hard counts. And then for us, we play a lot of man-to-man defense, so it's a lot about matchups and knowing their formations and tendencies on down and distance and that sort of stuff. But pretty basic, you know. We do the same things most people do in that regard. But generally speaking, if a coach was making too big a deal about it, I would say my basic philosophy starts with, we're going to do what we do and try to do it the best we can. We're not going to worry too much about the other guy. I got to make sure our kids don't self-destruct. You follow?
Mm-hmm. And what's your system of calling plays? How do you...
We're really old school, traditional kind of thing. I have kids stand next to me, and I shuttle the plays in. So, pretty typically, the first scrimmage of the season, how it's been the last couple of years. I'll usually have a tight end, a wing, and a fullback standing next to me, all three standing next to me, and I've got another group of, you know, there's another tight end, wing, and fullback that are starting. So on the second play of the game, you'll see three kids come out and three kids go on. And usually by the second or third scrimmage, one of those guys isn't in that rotation anymore. You know, maybe they didn't perform well or they got injured or something. But early on, you know, in the scrimmage, we're evaluating, so we're shuttling kids in and out. And we call plays like that all year. We shuttle them in with usually a fullback and a wing, usually. And if we're blessed enough to have a third tight end that we believe in, then he'll rotate in as well. But it's the terminology we use is very simple, you know. We call it formation. We don't run a lot of formations, so I don't say much about formations usually. So our plays are like Ray 34 power. And I say it to the kid twice, and the kid runs in the field, gives it to the quarterback, and the quarterback calls it twice in the huddle. So it's simple that way. We don't do anything else.
You ever get any complaints about your kids that you don't run a system that allows your kids to go to somebody's school, college, whatever? Do you hear that often?
No, we haven't heard anything like that. The kind of kids that we – first of all, we haven't had that many kids want to go on to play college football. You know, when I was in Maine, I had the kid – after 8 games, we had the number one rusher in the state. And he ended up being second team all-conference. So he wasn't even first – you know, all-state as a player because basically everybody said he was a product of the system. You know, and he was a tough kid, probably 165 or 170 pounds, probably ran a 5.1, maybe on a good day a 4.9. He went to play Division III football, you know, mm-hmm. and he's one of the best football players I've ever had. So I haven't had Division II, Division I guys at the places I've been at. But we do have a couple guys now that are getting some Division II looks right now. And I know one just went to the UConn, some kind of camp at UConn. So he's interested in Division I football as a walk-on. So, well, I'll let you know. But I have some parents that think that if we don't run, you know, multiple no-huddle shotgun stuff, that we won't – see, being a private school – there might be some parents that think that you won't draw those athletes in the first place, and all I got to do is remind them that they did run that stuff before, and we're doing better now. So, you know, we have the biggest freshman class coming in that they've had in a while, coming out for football. So, and there's some good players. Uh-huh. So, you know what, running backs like to play football too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're a fullback in peewees and you're a running back in peewees, you might want to go to a place that doesn't run the spread, and you might want to run the ball, you know?
That might be a hint.
Yeah.
You had a private school.
Yes.
That's what you said?
Yes,
do
Catholic
you have,
school, yep.
Do you have issues with academics there?
You know what? We did lose one of our linemen during the season for eligibility. But you know what? It's by far easier than the public schools I was at before. I mean, my first year at Boost Bay, I think I lost 23 guys the first eligibility period. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, you can't coach a football team where 23 kids are failing, you know? So, yeah, no, at East, I had one guy last year that didn't finish. Everybody else, there were lots of kids, I won't say lots, there was maybe 4 kids whose parents called me and said, you know, Junior's not doing his work, I might have to pull him out of football. I think we've got really good parents who are on top of these kids, and the parents are very involved in great, tight communication with the school about what kind of performance these guys are doing in the classroom. You know, at a lot of schools, you got to spend a lot of time doing grade checks and all that stuff. I mean, my teachers, they just shoot me an email and let me know what's going on right away. So it's not like I do a lot of tracking stuff down. They just give me a heads up. So that part of my job is easier.
How do you handle a kid who has an issue in the classroom?
Well, like anybody, I'm going to pull him in my office. We're going to sit down and talk about where he's struggling and why. Most of the time, in my experience, Leonard, is these kids are not stupid, the ones that are failing. They're bored. They're attention-seeking in the wrong way, and they're not getting the work done because of, in some cases, they're just emotionally not available for learning because the home environment is difficult. You know, maybe they go and get a part-time job after school, and then they got to babysit somebody while the parent's drunk. I mean, mm-hmm. you know how it is. It's they're not always focused on academics when they've got these other things in the way. So, but for me, you know, the experience I'm having right now, you know, I failed with the guy last year. You know, I warned him that, he wasn't going to be able to be part of a few different things that we had going on. And a lot of people were in his corner to make it happen, but he just wasn't able to make it happen. So we lost him, you know. So, you don't win them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What do you do during the summertime for as far as conditioning and getting your players prepared for August? I don't know what your state rules are and everything, but what are you doing?
We can't teach football or coach football. You have to let me rephrase that. You have to declare your intentions. You can have I think it's 10 days of spring ball, or I don't even know how many days it is. I can't remember if it's 5 or 10. I got my states confused there. You can have spring ball, but if you do that, your preseason is shorter. I wanted the longer preseason because I've got so many kids involved in spring sports that trying to do spring football just didn't make any sense. So what we do is we just continue our year-round strength and conditioning program, which starts in January. We just continue it all through the summer. It's the same program, but we step up the intensity, the duration, and the volume of the training through the summertime. So we only have about an hour and 15 minutes in the morning before school during the school year to run our program. And then in the summertime, we go to an hour and a half. We go to, what do we go now? We go from 7 to 8:30, and sometimes we stretch it out a little longer towards 9 o'clock. But, so it's about, you know, hour and a half to 2 hours in the summer. The first hour is all strength training and power training, and then the half hour is all speed and agility work after that. And then we also do team building. We play games and have fun. You know, we might play Ultimate Frisbee or Air Force football or team handball or something like that once in a while just to have a good time and have that team building thing. You know, we'll do seniors and freshmen against sophomores and juniors and play games and stuff like that. But we do like everybody else does. We do cone drills. We do sprints. We run hills. We do plyometrics. We want to make sure we're doing lots of starting and stopping and direction changes, jumping, overcoming your own inertia, and then, of course, getting stronger in the weight room. So it's 4 days a week. We take Wednesdays off.
Mm-hmm. When you got there, how many kids did you have involved in the program versus now? How many you have now?
Well, let's see. My first meeting, I kind of remember it was like a Friday afternoon and right after finals week when I got hired kind of late, you know, and I first met the kids kind of late and resigned from Old Town. And I had like 34 kids at that first meeting. And then the summer program, you know, I think the first week putting the equipment together was about 17 kids. Maybe the high of the week was about 25 kids. But we ended up with 55 physicals the first year. I think last year we had 55, and this year I would expect similar numbers. Supposedly we have 25 eighth graders that have committed. We'll see if they all show for football, because they also, some of them also checked off soccer on their interest form. So we'll see which they finally choose out. But around 50 for freshman, JV, and varsity. Somewhere around 50, 55.
So soccer and football are in the same time frame?
Yeah, we offer a lot of things at our school, and that's one of the great challenges is because, you know, nowadays a lot of coaches want kids to specialize. You know, we have a tremendous baseball program. It's very competitive to get playing time, and they play baseball all the time. They're always in the batting cages. They're always working on baseball. So you might lose some pretty good football players that decide they want to, you know, be college baseball guys or whatever. You got to work hard to keep them involved in football. We've got a terrific ice hockey program that went to the state championship. So, again, you got guys that are wanting to be on the ice all the time, so you might lose physical, fast kids to that sport. We've got a lacrosse program that just went to, I think they got to the semifinals. You've got kids that want to, you know, their coaches want them touching the lacrosse sticks year round, and you know, we got swimming, we got track, we got soccer, you know, we've got a lot, golf. I mean, we have a lot of things going on at our school. So you have better learn how to share athletes or compete for athletes. It's about building those relationships and keeping them excited about football, you know.
Do you have good working relationship with the other coaches?
You know, I do. I can't say all of them. It's not that the relationship is bad. It's just that you don't necessarily agree with policies. You know, like, we want to keep our weight. There's no secret, man. I really think for us, okay, if we get to the point where we have 20 kids that are 1,000-pound club kids, we can win the state championship. We got to get stronger. We got to get faster, all right? Or we're going to have to draw better kids to the school, and they're just going to show up. The talent ship's got to come in, you know. But for me, I am relentlessly after these guys to be in the weight room. I don't care if they play another sport. I encourage them to play another sport because I want them to be athletic and I want them to enjoy their four-year career. And 86%, whatever it was, of NFL draft picks this year are guys that played multiple sports. I can't say it enough to the kids. You've got to do more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And some of the coaches out there want to know that during their seasons, they're not worried about football. They're not worried about weightlifting. They're focused on whatever their sport is. So the coach might be a great guy, but his policy might be, hey, stop lifting. And my message to the kid is, hey, you need to keep lifting. So we might not always see eye to eye. And, you know, you sell it to the parents. You try to teach them why they got to keep going. I've got the numbers to prove that these kids can keep getting stronger even during sports seasons. And we do everything we can to bend over backwards to make sure we're not in anybody's way, because I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure I open that weight room at 6. We can be done by 7:15 so these kids can go to school on time and still make practice after school with no interference from me. So we're working hard to stay out of people's way without sacrificing all of the strength and speed that we've acquired by getting stronger. I mean, I'll use lacrosse as an example, because when we start our strength program in January, you know, we just finish our banquet, we take Christmas break, and we come back and go right after it. Those kids will lift for about 6 weeks, 6-8 weeks before lacrosse starts, and they'll get strong. And they'll get faster because I run them too. And then a lot of them will stop during lacrosse season. So when they come back to me, their training has been different. They've done a lot of long-distance running and not much lifting, so they're lighter, they're leaner, and they're not as explosive in many cases. You know, they might be in great cardiovascular condition, though. Mm-hmm. So I can work with that, but I just got to get them big and strong again, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the struggle. You know, that's the struggle. That's, you know, you got to find a way, especially to get your linemen. And they, you know, I talk to my linemen like, you're going to go play lacrosse, you still got to lift, man. Come on.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, that's when you, if you run a wing offense, that's the key to everything. You got to have them. You got to have them fat boys doing something, you know, in that weight room all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have
them. Yeah, well, I heard Phil Bravo say, you know, talk about deadlifts, and you know, we're the same way. We're a big deadlift program too, and there's no question in my mind that, like, all of our top deadlifters are our better football players. That's just how it is. Those kids are on the field, so that's a pretty good indicator for, you know, not necessarily like it's brute strength. I mean, it's great for the double wing. Brute strength, you know?
Yeah.
So
That's what it is. You still offer your materials for sales and everything?
I do. And, you know, sometimes I complain when people buy stuff because it means I have to get out of my chair here. You know, I got to get up and go make it. when I first started selling that stuff, Leonard, you know, my wife and I were just having babies, and I needed to put, you know, find a way to make some gas money, you know.
Uh-huh.
And now, you know, I'm a little bit fatter, a little bit lazier. You know, I don't necessarily want to be back in the hot office making books. But I do. I still sell stuff. I still sell DVDs. Occasionally I'll do a clinic. You know, I do more youth clinics where people bring their kids into the school and run a clinic there with the kids. I haven't done a coaching clinic in a year now. But, yeah, the website's still up. We still sell the Double Wing Illustrated, which I think is probably one of the best deals you can get for getting Double Wing information cheap. We still have the Double Wing DVD set, the clinics. We've got two different clinic sets. Double Wing book, the practice and drills manual is probably the hottest selling item we've ever had. And then we have all the defensive materials as well. I am due to update stuff, Leonard. Like, I know it's time for me to remake some videos and get all the discoveries and all the little tweaks and nuances, the new stuff. I need to get that on DVD for people. But I do share it freely and openly on the forum or through email. You know, I don't hide anything. So.
Now, do you have a web address that you have that people can go to?
I do. It's www.coachkalandi.com. And Kalandi is C-A-L-A-N-D-E, coachkalandi.com. And I get real tricky. My email is coachkalandi@gmail.com.
Okay.
So people should feel free to ask me questions. I'm not going to charge them for questions.
Before I ask you this last question, I want to ask, how's your daughter doing?
Oh, yeah. We had a pretty good scare where my daughter got pneumonia and went into the intensive care unit for about a week. You know, it's a scary thing when you see your child struggling to breathe. So, you know, for anybody out there that's a coach, I know Tim Murphy went through a period with his daughter. Anybody that's got kids, you know, you always got to keep your priorities in order. You know, for me, you know, it's faith number one, family, you know, then my job, and then football. So, you know, you got to keep it in order. And it's really easy to, you know, tell your kids, not now, I'll play with you later, not now, not now. And there may not be another time. So you do need to set aside time for your family and your friends and your kids and keep things in order, you know.
And I know you got a great partner in your wife. How is she doing?
She's wonderful. You know, she's if you look at what I've dragged her through, you know, moving around. Geez, we were in Pennsylvania. We went to Maine. Now we're in Connecticut, you know. So we've chased the coaching career. You know, we bounced around, and she's been a trooper, man. She'll go wherever I take her, and you know, the kids too. So, you know, they're making sacrifices for sure. You know, that's what it takes. I have you know, a different football background than a lot of people, so I'm making my own way the best I can.
Well, I always say, if you got a good partner, that's half the battle right there. You know,
oh,
they
amen.
Understand. You got to have a special one to be with you. They understand us coaches. Last question, Steve. Why do you continue to do this coaching thing?
You know what? It's still fun. The relationships I have, like, you know, I had my coach was over yesterday, and I probably spent $200 at the grocery store. And, you know, just to show everybody a good time and have fun here at my house, and, you know, to prepare as a team, as a group, to work with all these kids and to reach all these kids to make them successful and get them to believe in themselves and to change their lives for the better, and to make better men out of them and better husbands and better sons. And, you know, it's just relationships, man. The game is great, you know it, but you can also just go, you know, watch football anytime nowadays. You can get stuff on YouTube, or you can buy game videos. You don't have to coach anymore to stay involved in football, but if you want to stay involved in football relationships, you do. And if you want to continue to make a difference in the lives of young people, you know, teaching and coaching is just fantastic. You know, I think it's sad sometimes how hard they make it to coach, all of the concussion courses and the first aid and the CPR and the sportsmanship clinics, and we have all these different things you have to go through to be certified, and, you know, all these different things that I think some good people have called it quits. And I wonder sometimes if that's why, you know, when I click on our CIAC website, and I'm helping some people, anybody out there that's looking for jobs, if you go to the CIAC website and you click on vacancies and you click on athletic coaches, you will see so many coaching openings in the state of Connecticut. Assistant coaching, head coaches, you know, there's just jobs. It just seems like the last 2 years there's been a lot of openings, a lot of turnover, a lot of assistant jobs that don't get filled. So it's a good place to get started if you're looking to get started. But anyhow, I'd continue to do it because I love the game, and I love the kids, and I'm in this school that you know, this school teaches the right kind of values, and it's just a great group of people there. I'm just happy, you know.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for tonight, and man, you've been a trooper. I really appreciate you, and one of these days we're going to meet.
Yeah, Leonard, how long have we been pen pals? I mean, you know, we've talked on Facebook or through email. How long have we known? Well, I can't say known each other, but known of each other.
Since
what are we going back to here?
2006.
2006.
All right, we never laid
incredible.
Eyes. Yep, never laid eyes.
That's
on
amazing.
Yeah. All one common thread, double wing. Isn't that something?
It is. It really is. It really is. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me as a guest. You know, I'm certainly I'm more than happy to talk to anybody out there that wants to talk football. I love football, so you know, you guys send me an email or whatever. Okay.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate you. Okay, and have a good night for me. Okay.
All right. You have a great night too.
Okay, buddy. Okay, guys, that concludes our show for tonight. What a great guy. You know, all he does is build programs and try to do it the right way. And go check out his website. You know, he got a lot of good information on there for you. And hit him up with a email. Trust me, he will share anything that he can with you. Next week we will not be on, but what I'll be doing, I'll be in Virginia at the Single Wing Conclave, and Sunday I'll be on my way back, so we won't be broadcasting then. But I'll be interviewing some of the guys down there, and what I'll be doing throughout the week when I'm down there, I'll be uploading those interviews, and I'll let everybody know. And we may get out there with three or four different interviews. But we will be back on the following week, and we'll get our guest list up and let you know who we have. And again, let me again apologize for last week, and hopefully that won't happen again. I'll do my homework better. So, for all of you in the wingland, y'all have a good night. And again, find somebody, give them a hug. And tell them you love them. Good night, guys. Thanks for listening.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself.